I neglected to wish you a happy new year, and so there you are. You can see I make a really big deal about these things. But it's a good time, as has been mentioned already on multiple levels. The new year is a good time for self-examination. The new year is a good time for us to take a step back and think about what we do and why we do it, and hopefully continue to make progress in our own lives. But it's amazing, like has been said multiple times, how many New Years have gone by, how many years have gone by. Even in most of or many of our lifetime, the years go by quickly and seasons fly. And it wasn't so long ago that our world looked really, really different in so many different ways. The world continues to change, but really, really different in a lot of ways. Even, you know, for someone in their mid-30s, like me. And so the idea of, specifically with the technological revolution, we just have this new world at our fingertips. Some of us, me included, we did not grow up with this. If you are about maybe 25 or younger, you're pretty much a digital native. But if we are honest with ourselves, everybody else, we're immigrants in this whole digital technological world. And so even if we don't want to act like it, that's what the truth is, and sometimes we pretend that we weren't. But if we take a look back, even 20, 25 years ago, you know, we had televisions, but how did you figure out what was going to be on television that evening? Do you remember, for some of you? You had a thing, you had a little book, and on the front it said TV Guide. And it was printed, and you would look through it, and you would find the channels that you wanted and what was playing that week. And that was excellent, and it was a fixed time and space. If you didn't have a TV Guide, how would you figure it out? The newspaper would often have it printed. If you didn't have any of that in your house, then you would have to phone a friend. And if you phoned a friend, what you would do is you would have to walk somewhere, and you would walk over to this wall or a countertop, and you would pull something that looks like nothing. It looks like a handle to a cabinet these days, because it doesn't resemble a phone. And so you would pull this thing off of the wall that would keep you connected to the wall. You could only move in about a 15-foot circumference, and you would call your friend to find out what was going to be on TV if they had their TV guide. And if you didn't remember in your head what the phone number was of your family member or your friend, what did you have to do then? You had to get this big yellow phone book, and you had to look through and find their last name, and then they would be listed, and then their phone number would be listed, and then you would call them, and hopefully they would be able to look on their TV guide and figure everything else out. And when you found out that the show that you wanted to watch doesn't start for 2 hours, then if you wanted to listen to some music, what would you do? You would go to another room where there was a big stereo system, and you would input another piece of equipment, whether that was a record or a tape, or my first tape was Michael Jackson's Dangerous. But you would, I loved that album, oh my goodness. But you would input this thing, and then you would be able to listen to music. Again, you had to stay in the room that it was happening in order to enjoy it. And so we have all of that as our story. But now we have all of those digital options and more wrapped up into one thing, wrapped up into our cell phones, our technology. And it's not just phones, but it's amazing how much things have changed. And honestly, some of us that prefer certain older methods of doing things, from time to time, we can feel pretty out of date. We can feel judged by other people. Yes? Some of you know this, right? Just take a look at this French commercial.
Emma. Huh? Emma. 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 Emma.
Le trèfle maxi-feuille, vraiment plus large.
It's really easy to be drawn into the belief that technology can really accomplish everything, right? that pretty much that's all we need. Whether or not we would ever use that language, and I guarantee none of us in this room would probably ever use that language, but there's this mentality that can continue to grow that what we have now in our hands kind of provides for more or less all of our needs. But it's just not true. So what do we do with this reality that we have in terms of the technological world that we live in as disciples of Jesus? For good or bad, our lives are completely dominated by this. Our phones, our tablets, our televisions, and our computers are the, I'm not even going to say primary, I'm going to say only source of our communication, our information, and our entertainment. And so these devices that we have in our homes take up an enormous amount of the way that we interact with the world. And so on one end of the spectrum, what you have is you have different beliefs about all of this stuff. And on the one end, you get that people really, really are against all technology. So tech is Satan. So you get this idea over here that everything that is kind of technological or that you plug in or that you charge is guaranteed negative. And on the other side, what you get is you get this school of thought that says that tech is salvation. And so on the other side, what you get is if it makes your life faster, easier, more efficient, it's good. Now, the problems with both of these are, number one, it's just not that simple, because on the one side, if you say, hey, technological computers, they're all they've done is hurt our society, every single one of you know someone whose life has been saved medically because of a computer. So the advances that we've done, the ways that we communicate with family members that are far away, all of this is possible because of a result of technology. So it's pretty easy to debunk this one. On the other side, the interesting thought, and again, we don't use these words, but the interesting thought about tech being salvation lies in the fact that if it makes life easier or more efficient, then it's guaranteed to be good. The problem with that, as Jesus followers, is that when you look at many of the words of Jesus, efficiency and ease don't seem to be Jesus' highest priorities. You know, it's more efficient to kill your enemies than to forgive them, than to love them. It's far more efficient. You can take care of the problem really quickly. It's more efficient to ignore everybody else and get ahead. It's much more comfortable to focus completely on yourself. It's less comfortable to lay your life down for the sake of another, to carry a cross, to live in a self-sacrificial way. So it doesn't work to play into this dichotomy, and we're not going to try. But it's really important that we realize this. So as we get to this spectrum, what that leaves us with is living in the liminal space right here in the gray areas. Dun, dun, dun. So much of life is lived in the gray areas. And we have to learn how to embrace gray areas in our life so that we can actually find purpose and formation in the midst of lives that are not black and white and issues that are certainly not black and white. The reason that technology is so gray is because of how tools work. The technology we have was developed to accomplish tasks, so they are tools, right? And so what we have is the shovel, when it was developed, was an amazing tool. Absolutely fabulous. It made work so much more efficient. You could change and transform the earth with the invention of the shovel. But what happens to your hands when you use a shovel? Blisters and calluses, right? And so when we use tools, we don't just change the world with our tools, but we become changed by the tools we use. It's natural. Now, those calluses make you be able, eventually, after the blisters heal, they make you be able to work more and get more done, but they also take away sensitivity. And so there's a trade-off. And so everything that we do, when we talk about the way that we use tools, we have to understand that when we use tools, we are impacted, we are changed, we are transformed. And there's nothing wrong with being changed or transformed, depending on what direction that actually brings us to, what the end goal of that transformation is. The printed word by Gutenberg in Germany, when he created the printing press and it began to make books possible beyond just what people were writing, was a huge step forward. No longer did people have to listen to someone else's interpretation of the scriptures. All of a sudden, people could have Bibles in their own hands. What a breakthrough. Do you know what the trade-off is? It's all the denominations that we have right now. It's all of the different ideologies that we have, because everybody decides for themselves what's the correct way to interpret the scriptures. There is a trade-off. It's beautiful that people were able to engage with scriptures on their own for the first time. It's led to massive amounts of disunity too. There's a trade-off for our technological advances, and sometimes if we don't acknowledge that, then we can't actually figure out how to do that. That is just the reality, and it's okay. We want to take a look at a simple passage in Romans, because this is not a new thing. We sometimes think because our technology is new that the issues that we're facing are new, but they're not. When Paul was trying to teach the young church in Rome and in various other places what it meant to live a life that actually looked different than the world around them, a life that was formed by Jesus, he encouraged them in a number of ways. And one of my favorite passages that he does this in is in the book of Romans in chapter 12. We're just going to look at one verse today. And what he says when he's writing to the church in Rome is, he says, listen, he says, you've got all these inputs around you. The world is changing. And he says, don't conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. The idea of don't conform to the pattern of this world is a pretty strong challenge, and it feels pretty broad. The interesting thing is the word world here, there's two words in the scriptures that talk about the what the world is. One is cosmos, or where we get the word cosmos, same exact spelling, except in Greek, different letters. But the word cosmos is, for God so loved the cosmos, John 3. That he gave his only son. He so loved everything in all of the created order. That's what cosmos means. But that's not the word that's being used in this phrase. He's using a word called eon or aeon. But what that means is a certain period of time. It doesn't mean all of the created order. What it means is a certain time and place and the values that are present during that specific time and place. So don't conform to the pattern of this world isn't just talking about the whole created world at large. What it's talking about is the customs and the way of doing things in the present time. Actually, the New Living Translation is fabulous with this. And it says, don't copy the behavior and customs of this world. So the point that Paul is making is, listen, there are always going to be things around you that are becoming normalized. But your primary job in life is not to just join the normalization of all things. It's to actually be changed. And yes, you will be changed. But what are you going to be changed by? The challenge and the invitation is, let God change you. Let God transform you. This is just a different translation. Into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you'll be able to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. The idea of not being so changed by the world around us that we lose sight of what's important is an interesting concept as you get deeper into it. Paul is suggesting that as we connect with Jesus, there should be something about our lives that is completely timeless. There should be something about our lives that is recognizable, weirdly and strangely recognizable to a Christian that lived in 700. Weirdly and strangely recognizable to a Christian that lived in the year 1400. Do you know how different people were in 1400, in 700? There should be something. Everyone is shaped by their time and place and experience that they live in. But there ought to be something about who we are that goes beyond time, where I meet somebody that could be from a different era, and this includes a Christian in the year 3000. That they should be able to meet us, and there would be something for all you Doctor Who people. You know, you're loving this. There should be something about the connection between two human beings that follow Jesus in different times and different places that feels familiar, that feels a little bit like Jesus, that the Spirit enables. And I've experienced this across cultures, when I've traveled to Africa and South America and met brothers and sisters there, that I feel like we don't even speak the same language, but there's a familiarity there. You have a completely different cultural outlook on almost everything, but there's some sort of a familiarity there, and it's the Spirit of Christ. And there's something beautiful about that. And Paul says, listen, the potential is that you are shaped only and completely by the things around you, even as they relate to faith. But you do your faith things according to only the customs of your present time. Don't be shaped so much by that you miss the opportunity to be shaped by Jesus in a deeper way. We've adopted so much that's new and easy and efficient. And the reason that it's worth talking about technology specifically and not just kind of anything in our culture for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. We'll talk about this at most at 3 weeks as we look to the scriptures, and as little as this week and next week maybe. We're going to see where everything goes. We don't have a lot of a strong plan for it because we want to see what the kind of questions you're coming up with. But technology is changing us in an unbelievable way. Today, the average person touches their cell phone 80 times a day. If you are college age or younger, it's 150 times a day. What that means is that during waking hours and sometimes sleeping hours, the average is every 4 minutes you refresh your phone. Every 4 minutes. Think about the ways that that changes people. And this is a debated study, but a study from the Microsoft team in Canada a couple of years ago retraced some of the data that they had done in the year 2000, which was they found that the human being attention span, depending on what the issue is, your attention span goes in different directions. But the human being attention span was 13 seconds long. And then they did another study, that was 2000. They did another study in 2000, I think 14, and they found that it had gone down to 8 seconds. And comparative to that, the goldfish has a 9-second attention span. And so currently, based on a pretty, you know, a pretty large scale and within certain parameters, we have attention spans that are now just less, since the technological revolution started, just less than a goldfish. These things should, but it's not just about our habits. It's about the internal world. The constant influx right now that we have figured out about what happens when we are notified of something with our phones or through email, there's a little dopamine hit, a little a drug that our body creates that's linked to almost like low levels of heroin. It's a very, very, very strong experience. So when you feel that hit of a buzz or a notification, you get this little kind of surge of pleasure. That's what dopamine does. It makes you feel, it's the feel good release. So it makes you feel really good. And when that happens all day long, all the time, what we're finding now is that this is actually contributing not to people being happier, but to higher levels of anxiety. Because we need to keep finding that kind of artificial affirmation, or we're worried when we're not connected because we don't know what we might be missing. Studies are showing that people who are genuinely happy with their life, after 10 minutes on social media, turn it off and they are less happy with their life. Isn't this fascinating? It's changing, our technology is changing how we internally look at ourselves, how we feel, even the genetic makeup of the chemicals in our body. So it's important that we talk about this. The second reason that it's so important that we talk about it and our kind of the temptation to have unique conformity in this present age is that our connectedness to the digital world can be quite an effective substitute for God. Quite an effective one. It matches an idol in almost every way as well as money does. Maybe if Jesus were on the earth today, he would say you can't serve both God and smartphones. I don't know, but I don't think it would be that far stretched to consider. And again, I'm not against this stuff, but we have to talk about all of this. One of the most interesting things about idols or something that has control over us is when that's happening, you always underestimate how much power it has over you. The average person, when they are asked about their cell phone usage and how much time they spend on it, they misestimate by 50%. How much time do you spend on your cell phone? They're trying to be realistic. Their best guess is half as much as they actually do. So there's stuff going on here that we don't realize maybe how much of this it all has. Check out the godlike qualities that our technology has to offer us, because there are quite a few. The first one is answers. These are some of the godlike characters. You know, James 1:5 says, "If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask." Right, this is our knee-jerk, and although we're going to be joking about this, I want you to think very, very seriously about what I'm about to say. This is not actually what we say. "What anyone lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you." But most of us, when we are trying to figure out a problem, when we are trying to solve something, and it's not just what's the circumference of the earth, it's how do I become a better parent, what is our knee-jerk reaction? I'm gonna Google it. And sometimes we can think that information is the same as wisdom, and it's not. And so in this journey of learning to figure out what does it look like to be transformed by Jesus and not conform just to the way of doing things, we need to realize that as we even look at what it means to find answers in our world, sometimes our knee-jerk reaction is not to seek wisdom from God, but to just figure out what everybody else's best practices are. There's a place for that, for sure. But often that is not what will form us the most. We also have issues with comfort, that God offers us comfort, but so does our technology in a very interesting way. In John 14:1, Jesus is talking with his disciples, and he says, "Don't let your hearts be troubled." So what we end up doing is when we sense stress and fear and struggle, what we love to do is we love to distract ourselves. And distraction has a very, very similar experience to comfort, except that it doesn't solve any problems and it's very, very short-lasting. And so the temptation is when we have Netflix is that every time I'm stressed, that's my default. Every time that I'm stressed, let me just distract myself. Every time that I'm nervous or anxious, let me just not think about it. But what the promise is don't let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God. Trust in me for comfort, to be able to put your heart at ease. There's such beauty there. A third category is this idea of constant presence that God promises, but also our technological world can compete with. Okay, and so Jesus is talking to his disciples, "Therefore go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely, keep your phone with you," right? "And surely your phone can be with you at all the time." And this is this we're joking around, but again, we're looking at deeper things. And surely I am with you always to the very ends of the age. Our longing for constant presence and connection can be met because there is the potential to build a relationship with our devices. So the idea of when I am lonely, when I am seeking connection, my default may be to swipe and open instead of slow down and be reminded that Jesus' promise is that he is with us, and maybe we're actually unavailable to that because we are so distracted, because our minds are all over the place. One final thought, relational significance is something that we long for. The believers were at one in heart and mind. This is from Acts 4, the early church. "No one claimed that any of their possessions was their own, but they shared and liked each other's posts." There's this idea, again, when we long for relational significance, it's not true relational significance, but if we find a connection we get certain likes on an Instagram account or a Facebook post, or we follow somebody that's important and we get updates from them as if that makes us more important because we follow a sports star on Twitter. These things happen and we feel connected to other people. And yes, it is actually possible for connection to happen through digital means. However, if it is a substitute for the reality, if it's a substitute for sharing what we have with each other of ourselves, of experiencing life together, then we are missing out on one of the greatest gifts of God. And so it is important that we embrace the understanding that there is risk here, right? Woof. Sounds like a pretty bleak picture. So what is the good news? All right, the good news is we're going to go back to Romans 2, and we're going to take a look at the second part of it, because the first part says don't. Says what not to do. Don't copy the behavior and customs of this world. Don't just fit in. But let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Think about that phrase. Let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. The word for transform is where we get metamorphosis from. It is a complete change of the makeup of who something is or what something is. So let God transform, bring a complete change into a new person, or let you are intended to be renewed in your mind. The word for renew is always about a change for the better. Always. The word is where we get renovation from. It's a renovation, a renewal of the way that we think about things. So the encouragement is, listen, when you learn how to, because of Jesus, think about things in a new way, when we change how we think, all of a sudden we're going to be able to figure out and discern what God's heart is for us through this path. But we have to learn how to change how we think. And when we begin to do that, when we begin to give Jesus our minds, or trust that we have been given the mind of Christ and fix our eyes on Jesus, all of a sudden we have the capability to be able to think differently. I spent weeks on this topic in seminary. And you know what my takeaway was? I had only one long-lasting, legitimate takeaway. And you know what it was? We don't discern very well. That was a month of class on technology and theology, and that was my takeaway. We don't discern very well. We accept, we reject, we assume, we welcome without pause. We think that technology is morally neutral, and we don't consider how we are being changed by the shovel, how our hands are changing, and is it helping us to become more like Christ or less like Christ? With Jesus, our minds move toward renewal, and with Jesus, technology can then be redeemed in a beautiful way. Psalm 24 says, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. The earth is the Lord's and every single thing in it. If that is the case, then God can use all of it for his kingdom. And when we begin to think differently and look at this and say, okay, let my mind be renewed by Jesus. Let me think about the heart of Jesus. Let me fix my eyes on Jesus. And now let me look at this stuff. All of a sudden, we begin to see some things in a new light. And one of the things that we notice is that our technology is actually, at its basic core, a beautiful expression of the creativity that we have been given as creative beings created in the image of God. So God is creator. And God creates people, and in the Genesis story, he gives them the opportunity to continue to create, to work with the land that they've been given, to work and to create a society that is hopefully well-functioning, to honor God and continue that relationship. And our impulse, because we are created in the imprint of God, is the Hebrew word, in God's image, as if God put his hand in the sand and pulled it back, and this is what we look like. That's the image, and so we have this impulse to create. This impulse to make our world better. And so all of this stuff is an expression of that, whether it's used correctly or not. But we have this impulse. But then in Genesis 2, he gives this framework, and he says, listen, Adam and Eve, enjoy all of what I've given you. Continue to care for it. But don't eat from this one tree, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Don't try to have complete and unlimited autonomy to decide everything independent. Okay? Don't try to do the autonomy thing where you don't need to seek wisdom for what is right and wrong and the best ways to live or not. Let me stay in control of that. You can't handle that kind of responsibility is the message of Genesis. And so when that happened in the story, when human beings have this natural tendency to lose connection with the Creator but continue to do what they're supposed to be doing, just not with connection with the Creator anymore, we lose the partnership in creating for the sake of God's purposes and toward God's ultimate values. And that's when we find ourselves living a life that's really far less than what Jesus came to bring us. My task as a Jesus follower is to see the possibilities and the potential risks and to discern the path that allows me to experience life with Jesus more fully and extend God's kingdom most effectively. My job is to see the possibilities and the risks and then to walk the path that allows me to experience life with Jesus most fully and express Jesus' kingdom most effectively. That's my task. Figure out the gray area and learn how to live well in the gray area. When we have that willingness, what we're actually missing, I think, interestingly, is a new wave of creativity. with how we use all of our devices, with how we understand our technology. We're missing a new wave of creativity that could take us further in the right direction. When we have a willingness to think outside of the box and create ways of life that make our technology become tools again rather than idols, that's when we start to really take off. And the way that we do this is by identifying our values and being better at asking questions. On Wednesday evening, Dwayne led us in a life seminar that was excellent about creating a rule of life, it's called. And a rule of life comes from originally St. Benedict, and we won't get into all that, but it's a way of life. It's not a bunch of rules. It's creating strategies and practices that govern your life to live it to the best extent possible, to live it to the way that is the fullest experience of life with Jesus that we can have in this world. And so the big thing in the journey of discerning how that worked, and I'm just gonna steal it right now because it's worth it, is to begin with a values inventory. We don't start by saying bad, good, no more cell phone. You're not going to do that. It's a great idea, maybe. It's just not going to work. Because when we start with, what's the percentage, some of you know this better than me, of New Year's resolutions that actually are successful? It's like 4. So, what do we have, 75 people in here? So 2 of you are going to make it on your New Year's resolutions. Congratulations, you 2. Hope the rest of you feel terrible about yourselves for the rest of the year. So what we have is, if we just say, I'm going to do this task and this task and this task, good, bad, easy, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. And what we end up missing out on is actually how to honor God and express the kingdom better. So what we have to do is we have to begin with our values. So here's the process of figuring out, maybe discerning more with more creativity, how we live well in a technological world, okay? So the first thing is simple. The first question that we ask is what do I value? All right? So we say, what in life is important to me? What do I value? And we learn how to express that and even list that. What do I value in life? And then the second question that we ask is, does it line up with Jesus' way of telling us what it means to experience the fullness of life? So the values that I state, do they line up with what Jesus says is the truth about how to live life the most fully? By staying deeply connected and abiding in God, like a vine and branches. By giving what I have away and living life with an open hand and generosity. By caring for other people as if they are myself in the same kind of value system. Of rejecting things that pull my heart towards selfishness and money. Forgiving my enemies. Do the things that I value, simplicity, do these things line up with Jesus? And what Jesus says, I've come to bring life to the fullest, an eternal life. If you haven't heard me say this 10 times, eternal life is not life after we die, according to the scriptures. Aionios is a type of life. It's an adjective that talks about life with God that goes forever. But it begins now when we step into relationship with Jesus, and it goes forever. That's why when the rich guy asks Jesus in Matthew 19:20, something like that, what do I have to do to inherit eternal life? Jesus says, well, you have to, you know, give away what you have to the poor and come and follow me. He's not saying, and then totally independently, when you die, you'll experience heaven. What he's saying is that is how you step into the fullness of life that God has designed you to. And by the way, it goes on forever. And so that's the beauty of it. But we have to say, okay, do I know what Jesus values in life? Are my values lined up with it? And then the third thing, align values as necessary. So we may have to change some things. I'm just going to leave it. So then we align our values with Jesus, because if our heart is to follow Jesus, then we have to trust that the way Jesus told us about life is actually the best way to live. Okay. So then the fourth question, now we get into the practical part, okay? Question number 4 is, does my technology or my use of technology, does it help or hinder my ability to express the things that I value in life? Does it help or does it hinder my ability to express? Now, this is not blanket statements. These are saying certain practices that I have, specific practices that I have with my phone, with my emails, my work-life balance. Do these things help me, my habits right now, or do they hinder my ability to express what I value according to Jesus? And then finally, we prayerfully create intentional practices that lead us toward life. Intentional practices. Okay, so we finally, intentional. So we finally get to a point where we say, okay, because I have identified what matters most to me, now I can start to move into practices in how I deal with my technology and how I deal with my devices that actually encourage that. I grew up in close proximity to the Amish community in central Pennsylvania. Amish folks are a community of people who live, they live separated from society. They've kept their way of life since the mid-1800s, more or less. And a lot of people think that Amish folks, they ride horse and buggies. That's what's famous, if you've ever heard that. A lot of people think Amish folks hate technology. That's not actually true. What's true is that they value community. And so they've decided on community discernment when they deal with technology or issues that may change their lives. So a couple of years ago, when landline phones came into being, they had a big community discussion. And their discussion was, are we going to have phones in our houses or not? Is this a good thing or a bad thing? And the reason that they asked for good or bad wasn't just because it's tech good or bad. It's, will this aid or hinder our families from being stronger, because community is really crucial. And so they had these group meetings, and they discerned it's good to be able to be communicated with. But if we have a phone in the house, a phone could ring during our family's dinner time, and that would pull us away from community. So that's not positive. So they made a compromise, and they built these little shacks between their fields, about two families per phone. They ran a phone line to the shack in between the fields. Every day they checked it. They had a voicemail there. So if someone wanted to call them, they could call back, but it wasn't in the house because they felt like this allows us to be able to use technology for our purposes that encourages community, and we remove the practices that could discourage or splinter community. So they're not against technology. Now, they are separationist, and I'm not a fan of that, but they're willing to engage with all sorts of different technologies if they help their community life grow together. So that's kind of an example, you know. You may say after this, I really value relational depth with people. That's me. I really value relational depth with people. So here's one thing. That means that when I'm alone, I may decide to use my technology to send encouraging messages to other people, text messages, because I value relational depth with people. When I'm with people, I may need to keep my phone in the car when I go into a meeting and do the exact opposite so that I can value my relationships with people. This isn't rocket science, right, Tyler? He would know. You know, like, this is just basic learning how to say, I'm going to be guided by my values and not the popular ways of just doing things, because that's how it happens. And so we have to discern, and sometimes that means making hard decisions. Dwayne, you are up, my brother. Dwayne's going to share a story space this week about some of the practices that he is journeying through related to all of this. And he's looking up his notes on his phone, isn't he? He's just checking his email real quick in case he got a notification. This is just beautiful. This is completely unrehearsed, by the way.
No, I'm just kidding, though. That looks familiar, though, right? The scrolling on the phone and the waiting. So I recently came across an article that... when I read the introduction, it sort of jumped out at me because it felt a little familiar. The article was written by a guy who about 6 years ago had stripped off of his phone everything that was a distraction, he says, everything that was sort of, you know, taking him away, taking his attention away from the things that mattered. And the little story, the vignette at the beginning of the article sort of captured me, because he was talking about an experience he had when he first made this decision, that he had come home from work very intentionally to spend time with his kids. He was going to play with his son. And he got home and he was playing with his son. And then just sort of out of the blue, his son innocently asked him, Daddy, why are you on your phone? And it just jarred him because he realized he was sitting there playing with the train set or whatever, but he was on his phone, looking at his phone. And that sounded familiar to me because it happens to me. I think it happens to probably all of us at times. And I have done a pretty good job, I thought, of stripping away a lot of that stuff on my phone. So several years ago, I took away all the beeps and bells and dings and everything that could buzz to alert me of anything, to kind of minimize those distractions. Phone calls and texts I would get, but everything else, like my mail, didn't buzz or have a little badge icon or anything like that. But I still found myself in those moments, like, realizing, oh, shoot, I should be more present here. So this article went on to say, like, sort of the radical steps that he took to clean up his phone and get those things off. And so I decided to do this. This was 1 week ago today. So 1 week ago today, I took off of my phone some minor things that didn't really matter. I didn't ever really watch Netflix or Hulu on my phone, but I went ahead and took those off. There was one game on my phone that I haven't played in years, but I went ahead and took that off. But the big ones for me were email. So I completely disabled email on my phone. So for the last week, I have not been able to check or send emails on my phone. And then the second thing that I realized after looking at my usage, which Apple has now so wonderfully created this, look at how much you've been using your phone. I know, you can't lie, it tells you. In fact, it's every Sunday. I don't know if you get to choose that or not. Does everybody else get those notifications? It's like Sunday morning right before church. Your iPhone's like, guess what? You've used your phone this much this week. So anyway, but the big thing for me that I've noticed in that was Safari. For me, it was the wisdom thing. It's like, if you lack wisdom, I'm the Google king, right? I mean, I'm like just sitting watching a New Year's Day bowl game, and I'm like, hey, that coach used to be a player. Didn't he play for Oklahoma? What year did he play for Oklahoma? Oh, yeah, he played that year. That wasn't the year I was thinking. But, oh, I didn't know he went and coached there before he coached. You know, and I'm on my phone finding that I'm no longer watching the game, but I'm now engaged in this device. So that happened all the time, taking attention away from people. So this is how the experiment has gone. I promise I'm not trying to stand up here and do any sort of bragging or boasting. I'm just sharing my honest experience that has been really valuable for me. So no mail, no Safari. I took off the Apple News app, so I don't read news anymore. So that's gone. Anything that was a consumption thing, I even removed the ESPN app. So I don't check scores. I don't read news stories about my favorite sports teams. None of it. On my phone. If I want to do those things, I still do them, but now I have to get up and walk across to the computer, open up my laptop, and do them and be intentionally doing that. It's not on my phone. And so after a week of doing all that, what I've noticed, several things actually, two primary things that have come to my attention. Number one is moments of idleness. Moments of idleness are now, like, I'm super hyper aware of them. In the past, if I had a minute to wait or something, I didn't have much to do, instinctively would pull out my phone and start flipping through stuff, right? Now, it's funny, I still do. I don't think my number of pickups has changed. So I pick up the phone and open it and then realize, there's nothing for me to do here. Like, there's literally nothing for me to do. There's nothing I can read. There's nothing I can consume. So I have to put it away again. So in those moments of idleness, I've become more aware of, like, okay, what should I be tuning into right now? You know, maybe I should be quiet. Maybe I should notice other people that are the things that are happening around me. So that's been a real eye-opener for me because I've realized that I've just been so, like, not silent and not aware and present in those moments, right? So that's the one thing. And then the second thing is, like, right before bed. Like, my wind-down time before bed. I know it sounds stupid when I say it out loud, but I used to read the news a lot, like, right before bed. Like, and then you get all angsty about the news, and that's terrible. So, anyway, so now I don't have anything to read. I can't read sports stories. I can't read the news. I can't do any of that, which I used to do a lot before bed. And so, man, in the past week, I read a whole book. Like, isn't that fantastic, right? I read a whole book. I read through the book of Romans twice in its entirety, all 16 chapters, which that was pretty cool. I actually ended my day with the prayer of examine 3 times this week, which is 3 times more than any week previously for, like, a very, very, very long time, right? So a little bit more time. I regrouted the tile floor in my shower in my bathroom. I probably would have done that anyway. But I'm just finding, Right. I'm just finding that I'm having more time and more presence of mind. And again, you know, the goal of a story space is always thinking about how Jesus is shaping and sending me. And this is less about how Jesus is shaping and sending me and more about how I have not been allowing Jesus to shape me because I've been filling all the empty space with my phone. And so, and honestly, as I look back, I have not really missed not having those things on my phone. Like I said, I've been aware that they're not there when I'm pulling the phone out to check a score, and I'm like, oh, I can't do that. But I haven't missed it. I still text on my phone, and I still have a phone that I can call people with. And actually, speaking of technology being helpful, RMC, just in the last couple of weeks, I've started fiddling with a new app called GroupMe. It's new to me. My college students have been using it for years. But it's like a way that I can communicate with my whole MC at once, and we can communicate with each other. And it's great, and it's a helpful tool. But it's one of those things that just makes me realize, okay, how much have I been missing in life because I'm not just focused on the utilitarian communication of the device, but more about the consumption and the information that I'm getting from it. So that's my story.
Yeah. Thanks, Dwayne. And one of the fascinating things that I've noticed in my seasons of, I do tech fasts pretty regularly, a couple times a year where I don't use digital technology for about 3 days. And one of the things that I'm always fascinated by is that I think I choose the information that I'm letting in, but often my phone's choosing what information it's going to let in. The Facebook mentions, like, I'm letting my phone dictate what's going into my mind, and therefore I have less time to think about the things that I actually desire to think about. I think that it's my own thinking, but I'm actually surrendering that. So that's why this is important, and it doesn't have to be about phones, friends. You can say, you know what, wow, I really do, when I'm stressed, I go to television, or I do this practice, or I do that. It doesn't even need to be technology, even though that's the theme we're talking about, but you can go down through this to create healthy practices of life and to create eventually a rule of life, although Dwayne helps us move much more deeper in it, and we'd like to take the whole church through that at one point because it's so helpful. But these are things that we just need to be ready to engage in. I find it interesting that often we just, and we're wrapping up here, but we just we inherit practices that we've been given. I don't buy clothes outside of thrift stores. I should say my wife doesn't. So she tends to buy me clothes, and she picked up a pair of jeans the other day that fit me, and I tried them on, and I noticed, I don't know if you can tell, but they have a cell phone pocket imprinted in them that's not the size of my phone. And so I put them on, and I'm like, wow. And sorry if used clothes geeks you out. No, it doesn't. We do swap and drop here. But I looked at that, and I was like, well, that's just interesting. I'm inheriting a cultural value by even putting those on. I think that happens in real life for us. I think that happens. And so you just inherit things because of our generation or because of what's normal. And the challenge is, don't just accept anything as normal. Line it up with the values of Jesus. Don't accept anything as normal in our world. Live really abnormally. Christians should be the most questionable people out there. We should live questionable lives that people look at us and they ask, "What? You're weird. That's a little strange. Why do you treat the people the way you do with kindness? Why? How do they deserve that? You know, like people should say, "Why? Wow. You're weird. You're different. Don't fit in. It's okay. Don't fit in." We're given the gift of living as people whose minds are being transformed daily. So our prayer and my prayer for you and myself is that we would be freed to live simply as a slave to nothing, but as an agent of loving redemption to everyone. So let us be spurred on to express humanity's creativity toward that end. Let's reclaim the minds that we've been given so that we can experience life to the fullest like Jesus promised us. Yeah?